We could begin. Let me call the committee to order, the meeting of the Joint Committee on the Oregon State Hospital Site Selection Criteria. Good morning, everybody. And it's a lovely, cool morning outside. We have an agenda before us, which we can, I think, use to get our work done. What we'll do is start the meeting by walking through some of the work we've done and, in essence, a proposal for the site selection criteria based on the work that we've done in the interim in ranking the criteria. We'll take some public testimony on that, and then we'll have some further discussion and an ability to hopefully finalize some criteria as well as ratings. How's that as an agenda?
That's good.
Hearing no opposition, we're going to move forward. Okay, I'm losing control rapidly. What I wanted to do is start with, everybody has two handouts in front of them. One is the diagram of the process, and the next is some draft criteria. And just to walk everyone through briefly the process again, DAS will solicit parcels of land. They will apply a number of actually two mandatory criteria which we'll discuss. If land makes it through those mandatory criteria, there'll then be a series of technical criteria by which parcels of land will be scored based on the criteria and the weighting that we come up with. The top parcels of land that make it through the technical criteria will then be scored based on the programmatic criteria that this group comes up with, as well as weighted with the weighting that this group decides upon. Those will be reviewed by the governor, and there'll be some recommendations that will be made to the legislature. And following that, DAS does due diligence to be certain that those parcels of land are actually as they've been portrayed to be. So that's the process, and our role has been to come up with the criteria by which parcels of land will be assessed and scored. That, you know, teams of staff, much like scoring a grant proposal or hiring an individual, that staff will get together and apply criteria, and those criteria will be weighted based on the weighting that this group decides. We've had some discussions about what those criteria should be, and sort of a menu of those criteria, which this group has added to and deleted from, both on the technical side as well as on the programmatic side. And we've discussed those, and over the last couple of weeks, this committee ranked those based on what everyone on the committee felt was the most important to the least important, and we compiled all of that, and I think sent everybody out actually a blinded copy of the results, the scores from everybody without any identification as to whose rankings that they were. So I think people could just get a sense of where everybody was, and based on those those rankings, as well as based upon the discussions that this group has had, staff from both DHS and DAS have gotten together and put together, in essence, what's a draft for us to discuss this morning, and also to take some testimony on. And that draft is in front of you. It's the next handout. It says OSH land proposal review process draft. Phase one are the mandatory criteria. And as we discussed, the mandatory criteria were really two that are pass-fail. That land had to be the minimum parcel size with some flexibility there, as well as it needs to be in the general location as specified by the master plan in option two. Any land that would meet those, pass both of those criteria, would then go on to phase two, where the Department of Administrative Services would review each proposal, and they would then rank them. And for, we've just put out as an example, they might rank them, they might develop a 5-point scale and rank each of these factors by a score of 1 to 5. And the weighting would be that those in the cost and timing issues would be weighted multiplied by a factor of 3. And the technical land issues, the ones that follow, would be weighted multiplied by a factor of 2. In essence, saying that the cost and timing issues, which was reflected both, I think, by the committee's rankings as well as by the discussions that this group has had, were the ones that this group felt were the highest priority, and that the technical issues, those other issues, were certainly important, but not weighted as highly as the first group. We tried to keep this simple so that there would really just be two groups, and the weighting factor being the first group 50% higher than the second. And moving to the second page, the same things for the program and community criteria. In this, there wasn't really a way of grouping those, such as cost and others. And what we did is take your rankings, 1 through 16, and in essence drew a line at a spot when you looked at how this group voted. Those factors that are tier two, when you looked at the list, I mean, we ranked them based on the average score, but I think the other piece is that when you looked at it, most of those things in the tier two were actually ranked at the bottom, in the second tier of just about everybody's rankings. Although not everybody agreed that, you know, public transit was 16, most people had that somewhere between 10 and 16. You know, likewise, the educational facilities, same thing. And we drew a line, and the top group would be weighted 50% more than the bottom group. And the last phase of this is that the scoring of these proposals that come out of phase three, along with staff recommendations, would be forwarded to the governor, and the governor will then confer with legislative leadership, and DAS would then begin their due diligence. So that is a draft, and really is put before you this morning for discussion, for modification, for alteration, both in terms of deleting or adding criteria, changing where they fall on the list. And also, open is certainly the discussion of, is this the right way to rank them? One group 50% higher than the other. Should it be twice as high, three times as high? Should they be closer, 25% higher? I mean, all that, a lot of choice, but felt that there was a need to have a place to start. And so that's what you have before you. And with that, what I'd like to do is open it up for discussion questions. We have DHS staff as well as DAS staff here to be able to answer any questions. So with that, I'm going to be quiet. Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to have something clarified. The very first one, access to medical facilities, patients. That means where the patients live. Is that correct? Their home base.
I'm going to actually ask, because my sense is at this point there'll be a lot of questions for staff, and I'd ask Bob Nickel and Bob Reitmeier, Bob from DHS and Bob from DAS, to come forward, and you know, I'm going to let Bob talk about that access question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Nickel, and I'm the State Administrator for Mental Health and Addiction Services. The access to medical facilities for patients, my understanding of that is that we frequently have some sort of medical crisis, and we've got to have very quick access. Just, for example, as we have here in Salem, it's probably 2 miles to the emergency department and to good medical care, and that's what I understand that one to mean.
Okay, so I just need clarification on where in the criteria is, where do most of the patients come from? The facility closest to where their original home is.
Mr. Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, I would say that one's probably down under the proximity to patient families. It's not necessarily that people always live close to their families and then come to the state hospital from there, but that one seems like the closest to that. A proxy for that, I suppose, is the availability of local community residential treatment facilities. The reason I say that's a proxy is our goal is to get residential facilities equally distributed around the state according to population. So that would be a proxy. I mean, frankly, this is one that I would have, you know, I had some questions, too, about how the issue of closeness of the facility to where most patients live comes in. I would add, though, that option 2 was recommended by the governor and the leadership and by KMD, because if you place the hospitals in the locations that are proposed with option 2, they're close, I believe, to 93% of the state's population. So in a way, the overall option 2 gets at that issue.
Now, I'm confused when you say option 2. You mean this tier 2?
No.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair,
explain again.
Senator Mona Sanderson, the option 2, which is the KMD, going back to the phase 2 report.
Just remind me what KMD is.
KMD were the consultants that we worked with.
Okay.
And when they issued the phase 2 report, they recommended option 2 because in listening to all of us, they felt that the issue of proximity to where people lived and where they came from and where they would go back to was a very important value in the state. And that's the reason for recommending 2 hospitals rather than just a single large one.
Okay.
Option 2 is the 600-plus bed, odd-bed facility in the North Willamette Valley and the 360-bed facility south of Linn County.
Right.
These criteria would be applied. These are generic criteria that would be applied to land for either facility. And the medical facilities is Bob, if I'm understanding right, is the access to medical care for those people that are in the hospital, you know, the non-psychiatric medical care.
Well, I know that in previous testimony, there was testimony from the committee here that they felt it was very important, or that it wasn't as critical for families to be close to the patients. And there is someone else that, in some cases, I think that is the case, that where there is probably a great conflict between patient and family. But I'd like to state, too, as a family member, it's extremely important, it was and has been extremely important to me with a patient who is in a state hospital to be close to them. Because in many cases, the relationships between family and the patient is good. I mean, there's a very loving, strong relationship, and the family wants to be as supportive as possible. And so I was trying to just bring that on the record, that proximity to patient families, I would say maybe it was a minority where maybe that wouldn't be the best situation, especially maybe if it the drug, I mean, I don't know. I would think that the case managers and the physicians and the staff can figure out that. So I sort of wanted to put that down because as a mother with two young kids with a spouse who is in a mental hospital and you have to work and care for your kid, you still want to be there with your husband, having a huge commute is an extremely stressful situation. So I wanted that on record to say that I think it's important for family. It is important for family to be able to be close to a facility. So that's why I was asking whether the patient was close, you know, where the patient resided. Yeah.
Senator Winter. On the medical facility issue, going back to a patient, you know, when you look at emergency care without having a hospital or something in close proximity, you run the risk of a huge transportation where the patient could die. And I think that that's probably why, you know, for me it came out as to number one on that tier, because you do have to have certain services available, because we don't provide operational services inside of the state hospital. We don't, you know, we have to rely on this greater community here in order to provide some of the services for the individuals who are inside of the state facility. And if that's not available, or if it's not closely accessible, it can create some huge problems, not the least of which could be liability for us. So I need to put that on record because, you know, when you talk about the population that we're serving, they don't come with just the mental health issues. They also have physical issues, and so I think we need to look at that as well. The other thing, and I think, and we haven't talked a lot about it because it's, to me it's kind of a disconnect. We haven't talked about what the recovery model looks like in order to answer some of the other questions that go directly to what the good Senator Monsanto is talking about, because not all of these populations are going to be in the facility. You know, you're talking about a new way of doing business in mental health where we've got more community, as I read the model, more community infrastructure and programs so that some of them will be right at home rather than whether it's 10 miles or 20 miles or 60 miles. So I think that needs some clarification, and that's been the struggle that I've had because it does to me seem like a disconnect. We're doing the siting and we're talking programmatic issues as well as siting issues.
Representative Dalton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Actually, my intention was to try to remain quiet the entire meeting, but that's not...
Sorry, 20 minutes.
you know, I think Senator Winters and Senator Moss Anderson bring up a really interesting point, and that is the proximity of, you know, Salem Hospital and the state hospital, and I guess I wonder if the Salem Hospital has any particular accommodations that they've made to be able to receive your patients at the hospital and manage the patients at the hospital. Salem has a secure psychiatric unit. I don't know if folks are getting in there when they're getting treatment, but Salem is a pretty significant hospital, pretty great, good size, great programs over there. And if we were to see that, you know, we would that the hospital may be moved to another location, are other hospitals, you know, at other potential sites equipped the way Salem is to manage your crisis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, I think the first of all, when we transfer patients over there, they don't go to the locked psychiatric unit. We transfer them there because they have a physical problem that can't be managed even in that psychiatric setting. So I would say that, I mean, of course, it would be good maybe to hear from Salem Hospital directly about whether they've made some accommodations. I think the fact that they've been in the community, they are the hospital for this community, and they've served state hospital patients probably going back to 1883 or whenever Salem Hospital got there. They have a lot of experience with this, and whether they've made conscious adjustments or not, they are an experienced hospital, and they've worked very well with us.
Do you think that that's a factor down the line that we should consider the ability of the hospital to serve those patients?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, I would consider that, if you ask my personal opinion.
Bob, wouldn't it be true that, I mean, that's, in applying these criteria, I mean, those are, I would think, that the kinds of issues that the scoring team would look at. Did a facility have the array of services available that to meet the needs? Not every hospital has the same services, their ability to deal with a special population, their history, experience, all those things.
So, Mr. Chair, so would that mean that when you're looking at various sites, that probably Salem Hospital would score higher than, say, Willamette Falls or Meridian Park or some other area that would have hospitals close to a site? I don't know the differences between what Salem Hospital provides versus a hospital in, say, the metro area.
Mr. Chair, Senator Monis Anderson, you're raising a good point, and I think as those of us who are involved at some point in providing some consultation to the process of scoring, I think we would want to have some notion of how different hospitals have different capacities. So I think it's a good thing for us to keep in mind.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Two questions. We have a document that we received by email, I believe, email or mail, recovery model and introduction. Could you identify, please, Mr. Nichol, who prepared the document so that if we wanted to follow up with that person or persons, we'd know who our
resource. Sure, Senator Gordley, I would have to, I know we assembled a whole packet of materials, I believe it's under Winter's request, and I don't have them in front of me right now, so I would have to look at them document by document, but we could identify who created each one of them. Some were created by my staff, but others were created, as I understand it, by the state hospital staff, and we wanted to include a variety of things.
I think Patio can work with you to be certain which documents. And
I found the document very useful, and I was listening very carefully to Senator Mons Anderson's statement and also Senator Winter's follow-up statement about the importance of family, proximity to family and those related issues. I identified very, very strongly with the issue that Senator Mons Anderson raised, and I was waiting to hear something in response from Mr. Nichol. I thought you might have a comment directly related to the concern that Senator Mons Anderson raised as it relates to the recovery model.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, my view of the recovery model is that it's something we can't do in just one place. It really has to be done throughout the system, and that's certainly the goal that we're working toward. I really believe that the families are a piece almost always of the recovery process. I know and I recognize and respect that there are exceptions, and we need to be respectful of that in the treatment process. But that gets more directly at the question you have. I think it's going to be critical that we continue to train the community and the hospital in some of the same kinds of technologies so that when people move, even if they go 2 hours away or 6 hours away or 30 minutes away, they ought to be getting many of the same consistent approaches.
That's very good to have on the record. What I didn't hear was a response to the concern that had been raised. My other question has to do with the placement of local support of the project in Tier 1 near the bottom of the list. And I'd like to hear something from the department around
this is very important.
What is your view of the importance of local support of the project? It comes out near the bottom of the list, at least in our ranking. But what is our thinking about the importance of having that local support in the face of Not in My Backyard and a huge amount of educational work that will be required to help the public understand what we're undertaking, and given everything we know about stigma and et cetera, et cetera?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, it's a great question. My experience in talking with people from various communities, and I've had a chance to do some of that lately, is that most every community has some mixed feelings. And I think that's not to be panicked over. I think it's something to be worked with. If there was a community that, let's say, just hypothetically, had already had an institution or two or three placed there against their wishes, I think that's on a continuum, a much more difficult and important issue that we would have to look at. So I'm not sure how to answer it any more specifically than to say I think most communities will have some mixed reactions. I'm confident that wherever we cite this, over time we will be good neighbors. We'll create good neighbor agreements if we need to. And over time, the history is the placement of facilities doesn't lower property values. It doesn't really create problems in the long run if it's properly funded and staffed and operated.
Technically, I would just point out that the groupings, everything in Tier 1 is actually on equal footing. That they would all be, in essence, ranked just higher than those in Tier 2, but there's no ranking within each of those tiers. So it being on the second-to-last line really has no scoring or ranking significance. The significance is that it actually is in Tier 1 and that having the support of a community is something that this group valued. I know that Senator Courtney wanted to make a comment because I think he had to step out for a moment, so I wanted to turn things over to him.
Well, I just want to say that I don't have the expertise as a member of this committee or the audience have. One of the things that's increasingly striking me is that while we're very focused on 320 and 360 and 320 in the residential facilities east of the mountain, perhaps one of the most compelling parts of the master plan, phase two, is the last three paragraphs before they go to the appendix on page 38. And in some ways, that paragraph will decide how successful we are, and much more so than even these major facilities. And it talks about, you know, it says on a recommendation, it talks about how they recommend we go to option two. And then it talks about the 93% and the different things you're talking about. But then, in a very quiet, under conclusions recommendations, it has a little thing called community-based resources. And it says, sufficient funds need to be made available to community caregivers to provide enhanced support services for individuals with severe and persistent mental illness. An additional 419 community residential beds are needed by 2011 to support the scope and size of the state hospital described in this report. A significant number of these beds have already been budgeted but continue to support need. I would just go on. In addition to the dollars needed to construct these new community residential programs, infrastructure funding to the counties is needed. Then it goes on. This is key to the recovery model and necessary to ensure more appropriate use of state hospital resources. The last sentence there, better integration among counties as well as between counties and state hospitals needed. it is clear to me now that we can build the most magnificent 620-bed facility, the most magnificent 360-bed facility. We can almost perfectly locate them, I mean, give and take, within maybe 20, 30 miles. We can do a great job east of the mountains. But this probably, when it's talking about families or what do you do in transitioning, this could be, in a way, the sneaker recommendation or the sneaker three paragraphs of the whole phase. And I wasn't aware of that because I've been so fixated on we got to build these new facilities. So I don't know how much of that, Mr. Chair, plays into this discussion that's going on. It sues anybody. The truth of the matter is we've been talking my fellow legislators. We talk about this costing $324 million to build these mental health facilities. That does not include these last three paragraphs, which if we don't do, I have a feeling, well, we'll get some credit, but we will not have truly a great mental health system in the state of Oregon, nor will the major facilities be able to work that well. So I don't know whether that fits in here or not, Mr. Chair, but that's a sneaker little phrase. It's the last thing in our report. Everything's in appendix. It's the last little thing sitting there. So I don't know how that relates to east of the mountains, but I have a feeling it does. I don't know how it relates to the greater Portland area. I have a feeling it does. I know I got a little issue down here. I even think down you get Grants Pass in Medford and Roseburg and Ashland. I have a feeling it's big down there, even though we're going to build a facility down there. So I don't know, Mr. Chair. You help me, Certified Smarts. Does that relate to anything we're talking about here? Hello?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I couldn't say it better myself. I think it absolutely provides the overall framework. And in that sense, it doesn't matter whether we build six state hospitals, three, two, or one.
Mm-hmm. You're talking 419 community. They identified number of beds there. That's a substantial number of beds, if you understand what I'm saying. That's more beds than the 360. It's more than half the beds of the 620, if you understand what I'm saying. This is a substantial commitment to our mental health issues in the state of Oregon as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, those numbers are within the range of things we've been able to do. I think the thing that I would add is that we can't focus just on what we call the back end, which are those residential services. We also have to focus on helping kids when they have their first psychotic episode, for example, not end up with a life of being a mental patient, frankly. And again, we have models for that. We have the East Project in this community, and it's done an incredibly good job.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to, I think Representative Hanna was next, and then Senator Wynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I was with you until your last comments before Senator Courtney when you were explaining that the ranking, you went through the last ranking thing, so this might be semantic,
okay,
but I want to make sure I understand this because we had this conversation, and I thought I was up to speed with you where you were. But when you said that, for example, because local support of the project was on line 8 of the first 9 in Tier 1, it didn't matter in the ranking. It did matter in the ranking because that's where this group ranked it. It doesn't matter in the weighting. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
I
just want to be sure we're on the same page.
We're on the same page.
We did rank it, and that's where it falls within Tier 1.
Right.
Within Tier 1, but the weight for Tier 1 is still 50% more than Tier 2.
Exactly. And if it stays in Tier 1 and when it gets operationalized and scored, it will have the same weight as everything else.
Yeah, I just wanted to know that.
Perfect. Yes, would have been better said is that these are indeed in order of the importance by which this group ranked them, based on average score.
Yeah,
that's correct.
All right.
Okay. In the essence of time, you can continue.
Well, what I wanted to do was to I think. This is a perfect time to actually ask for some public testimony on the after public testimony, we'll do that. To take some public testimony on this, we'll excuse Bob and Bob, and perhaps they'll be back. Take some public testimony, then we can have some further discussion, see if we want to change some things, and move forward. So with that, we have the list. Uh, great. And we have two individuals, Daniel Smith and Randy Davis. I'd ask them actually both to come up together. And welcome. If you introduce yourselves, I think many of us know you and appreciate all that you do.
Okay. Chairman Goldberg, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Daniel Smith. I'm a forensic psychologist resident at the Oregon State Hospital. I'm also the treasurer for SEIU Local 392, who represents the majority of workers at the state hospital. And I've been fortunate to be a participant in the master planning process from the selection of the companies to do the bidding and so on. Do you want to?
I'm Randy Davis. I'm a mental health therapist too. I work in Oregon State Hospital in men's maximum security admission. I'm also a member of SEIU Local 503.
Please.
If I could, I'd like to speak a little bit to the idea of the recovery model. This is something that's been a movement in mental health for quite some time. When I worked in Wisconsin, it was known as wraparound, and it's been known as other names in other areas. Essentially, the idea is that clients, patients, residents, users of our services take more and more responsibility for themselves. And Senator Anderson, in comments you made earlier about the wife whose husband was in the mental health field or system and whose children were being served, hopefully that person would be served in the community under the recovery model. Someone who has that much support would very likely have a very brief hospital stay and then be returned to the community, which speaks to something that Senator Courtney was talking about, is the absolute necessity for changes throughout the mental health system in Oregon. This hospital, the master plan as designed, is actually smaller than the current hospital given the growth in population. It absolutely requires that there be community facilities at all levels for the hospital to be successful, to prevent it from returning to the position that it was in, where so many problems became apparent beyond just the physical structure of the hospital, specifically the overcrowding and the dangerousness to our staff and to the residents of the hospital. We're talking about a need for changes in care for children, care for families, care for adults with substance abuse problems, and care for adults with mental health problems. The hospital is the bottom of the sieve. Everybody in mental health in Oregon, if you want to consider it in a very large sieve, the bottom of that sieve is the state hospital, and everybody who is not served elsewhere comes to the state hospital. Without counselors, without family therapists, without child therapists, without group homes, without foster homes, without community-based support at every level, the hospital has to pick up the slack. Those people who cannot be served at the state hospital are then served at community hospitals at taxpayer expense, a significantly greater expense than if they were served in the community. I look at your criteria, and just going through it very quickly, many of the things that you mentioned are attached to the recovery model. In phase two, under technical criteria, employee relocation. Employees who are familiar with the clients and residents of the state hospital and with their needs are absolutely essential for the recovery model to be successful. People who can develop individualized treatment plans based upon the needs of individualized residents. Also, a staff who is very familiar with mental health issues of this type. People who are professionally trained at all levels, from our floor staff to our psychiatrists. Then in phase three, tier one, specifically as I see related to the recovery model, for the availability of local community resources and treatment facilities. Again, this is throughout the state, whether it's Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, Portland, or any other portion of Oregon, there need to be adequate facilities. There need to be counselors for people to go see. There need to be case managers to help people manage their funds. There need to be family therapists to work with the families of somebody who has a mental illness to help them learn how to cope. there need to be people who can help the children who have early signs of mental illness so they can prevent it from becoming more serious. And this can be done at every level. Right now there's a cooperative effort in Yamhill County with Head Start where representatives of the mental health in Yamhill County go to the Head Start, meet with the teachers there, and talk about meeting the needs of the children. Not necessarily mental health needs, but a whole variety of needs in terms of social interaction. And they can help them deal with that. That's incredibly important. Again, retention of current staff. Our psychiatrists, our psychologists, our line staff, our nursing staff, even our custodial staff are people who are familiar working with chronically mentally ill, seriously mentally ill women and men, people who know how to deal with whatever comes their way and to do it in a way that shows respect for the resident as well as keeping everybody safe. Also in terms of the recovery model, local support for the project. Excuse me. When our residents begin community reintegration practice, not even when they're going back to their own communities, but when they're just beginning to practice those things, to have people point fingers at them on the bus and say, who's that or what's going on with that person, is shaming. And it's not always intentional, certainly if it's coming from a child, it's curiosity. But when it comes from an adult or when it comes from a community who says, we don't want those people here, it makes reintegration that much harder. And so having some community support, some community familiarity with people with mental illness is very helpful. Work opportunity for patients is also something that's necessary. If people are going to recover from mental illness in a long-term way, then they need to have some kind of self-respect returned to them. Very often that comes from work. Very often that comes from gainful employment, whether it's in a sheltered workshop or it's in the community. Then we look at your tier two, and again, proximity to patient families, although I must say that the majority of residents at the hospital's families are no longer involved in their lives because the families are burnt out. They have not had the community support, they have not had the therapeutic support to allow them to continue to deal with a chronically, seriously mentally ill person. So far too many of our residents are set aside from their families. That could be changed with more community involvement. Family work and support, I think I've spoken to that. Educational facilities, incredibly essential. Many of our residents have a great deal of intelligence, and when they are allowed the opportunity to learn based upon their own strengths and abilities, they do significantly better. Ease of transportation, patients throughout the state is very important, as is public transportation. Being able to go into the community first, very often supervised by staff members and then eventually by themselves, requires public transportation. Most of our residents do not have their own transportation, and so saying, well, yes, you can go to town today, but it's a 5-mile walk, probably won't go over too well. I know that there are a number of other things that I can speak to, and I'll be happy to attempt to answer any questions I can, but I'd like to give Mr. Davis a chance to speak as well.
Okay. Why don't we do that, and then we'll take questions.
Yeah.
Please.
Again, Randy Davis, work at the Oregon State Hospital. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, people at the hospital were really happy to see that in the program community criteria, the way that you've set up Tier 1 and Tier 2. There was a document that was forwarded to Bob Nichols, and I'm pretty sure you got it, that was potential siting criteria that was sent forward. It was a survey that was done of the people working in the recovery system. I'm sure that you got it in. Almost exactly as the staff who actually work with the patients in the recovery model trying to do the job of getting people reintegrated into the community matched almost exactly Tier 1 and Tier 2 for priorities that you said, with the exception of public transportation, which you moved to Tier 2, which the staff that work in the recovery model, and those currently in the 41 building is what we call it, they're the three residential facilities units we have that do a lot of community integration, and their patients are out on their own using public transportation and relying on public transportation to get their needs met, doing some of their own independent and group community integration. So otherwise, the Tier 1 and Tier 2 criteria for program community criteria pretty much reflects what the staff who work with those patients think currently. But I also like to take a moment to answer a couple of questions that were posed. Senator Moines Anderson was curious about whether or not Salem Hospital is established more to deal with state hospital patients in emergency situations. As a person who transports patients in emergency situations to Salem Hospital, I can tell you right now that Salem Hospital has a pretty good system set up to handle patients not only from the state hospital, but from OSP and other state institutions in the Salem area. I know that they have a secure waiting area for me, so when I come in with a person from emergency transportation, they have a secure room that I go to that's away from other people in the emergency room waiting for care. So not only is there no stigma attached to my person who may be fluidly delusional and may be saying things that may threaten or feel make people feel awkward, but they're also allowed to feel secure and safe in an area where it's they can be comfortable. And also, within the ER section, I know of at least two rooms that they specifically use for OSP and OSH. They're rooms, not the curtained-off areas in the ER, but separate ER rooms with all the same facilities of the ER area where the patients are. We have our patients go to that allows them to be in a safe, secure area with the staff away from other patients in the ER. So Salem Hospital, I think, has done a relatively good job of finding a way to deal with the incarcerated population of Salem, because they are the primary emergent care facility for almost for every state institution in Salem. So they deal with a relatively large population of people who have emergent situations. So I hope that answered Senator Moines' answer to the question whether or not Salem Hospital might be more equipped than another hospital. I'm not sure how things work in the Portland area. I do know they have a number of emergency rooms, and you know there's a number of hospitals in the Portland area. But I do know that Salem Hospital has taken their time to set up a system that works. Also, I'd like to address Senator Gordley asked who was the creator of the document, and another page came with that document, and I don't know if it came forwarded, but it had the email addresses of the people who created the document. So I don't know if you got that or not. Nancy Franz Geddes, who's a director of nursing services now, and Dick Yates, who's a unit director on 41B, were the primary authors, I believe, of this. And Mary Ann Gree, registered nurse who works in the 41 building, forwarded it to Bob and gave it forward as well as with the survey from the 41 building people. So if you don't have those,
provide us with the.
I have one. I have
the
one.
Contact info. We'll get.
I have one copy, so I can give it to you, and then okay. You can. So. And that was the other. So I really, in just, I'm really glad that you've taken the time. I'm glad the committee is here to deal with site criteria. It looks like the way that you guys have basically, the committee itself has been able to establish Tier 1 and Tier 2 for their own priorities seems to generally reflect not only what seems to be the committee's opinion, but pretty much the opinion of the people who work and do the duties of the state hospital. There are things that we feel important, and it seems to be that Tier 1 and Tier 2 is established, with the exception of public transportation being an available criteria, seems to have pretty much mimicked what we would feel is important.
If I could speak for
thank you. Let me just see if there's any questions.
Yes.
Senator Moniz Anderson.
Thank you. What percentage, and I'm not sure you can answer this, are at the state hospital that are there due to, that should be incarcerated due to the
forensic?
Yeah, the forensic.
Chairman Goldberg, Senator Moniz Anderson, that's an interesting question. The state has its own system for dealing with people who plead guilty except for insanity, and they're considered forensics patients. So, in essence, they've been found guilty and they're incarcerated at the state hospital. There's a percentage of patients, I'm not sure exactly how to answer that, who should be incarcerated in a prison facility and not in a state psychiatric facility. That would be a good question.
More than Dr. Fickle can answer that.
There you go.
He's got those figures at the tip of his finger. Dr. Fickle.
For the record, my name is Marvin Fickle. I'm the superintendent of Oregon State Hospital. Chairman Goldberg, members of the committee, I think the question is really one that needs to be examined a little more broadly than perhaps is sometimes discussed. As Mr. Davis was just saying, all of the patients who are currently at the hospital who are under the jurisdiction of the Psychiatric Security Review Board have been found guilty except for insanity. that is, they've already been adjudicated in a way that our judicial system says they are not appropriate for the Department of Corrections incarcerations. As you have heard in a variety of ways through the media, through testimony and other legislative committees, there are a number of our patients who, in the opinion of our staff, could be better served in other settings. I'm in certainly no position to tell you exactly how many those people might be from a clinical standpoint, but from a judicial standpoint, the courts have already made the decision that those are not, and therefore, you know, we're not able to assist them in moving to another setting.
So just follow up. So what you're saying is you don't want to track them as forensics patients, but more as they are patients with a mental illness, and so the fact that they had committed crimes in the past, I just wanted to get a feel for how many in the state hospital.
The percentage. You want to get a sense of the percentage?
Well, Chairman Goldberg, Senator Monis Anderson, currently we have about two-thirds of our patients are what we consider forensics patients. Three-quarters of that are patients who have been found guilty, except for, or not guilty, guilty except for insanity, as we call it in Oregon, NGI, you perhaps have heard that expression in other settings, and approximately 100, or just short of 100 as of today, who are there to be treated until they're able to aid and assist their attorney in their criminal court case.
And how many total do we have in the state hospital again? I know I should remember.
600 and...
Okay.
80 today...
681.
All right. And then one other question that's really for those who work at the state hospital, and I want to preface this with the fact that I would want all of you to be wherever this new place is going to end up. And this isn't a reflection of anything, but I want to keep the staff that we have. But we also need to be in an area that has availability of other professional staff too, and I know, and this is just anecdotal, but there are two mental health specialists in the Portland area that would love to work down here at the state hospital, or they would, but because of the distance. So I think we have to take that into fact too, because physicians, they would prefer to work in the Portland area or the metro area rather than the Salem area. So availability of professional staff, I hope we really take a look at as to whether there, since we have such a hard time, especially at the physician level, in getting people to work here at the state hospital, that we have to look at where the availability of this staff is too.
I have a question and a comment, and I want to go back to the recovery model, because some of the things that we're doing here in Salem is talking about mental health courts, similar to what we're doing with drug courts, in order to divert individuals from having to get further into our criminal justice system. Do you see that kind of approach as a part of the recovery model system? You know, as we move forward and talking about community support or non-community support, how do you see that with inside of that model?
Chairman Goldberg, Senator Winters, when I worked for Clackamas County, I had the opportunity to participate in drug court, and there it was used, I think, very wisely in helping people who really wanted to recover, who wanted to be successful in the community, by giving them an outside source of support and accountability. I think, and I make an assumption here, that the hospital would be willing to work with people in that kind of setting. However, the issue that we run into is the length of hospital stay. Typically for people in a drug court would be a shorter stay, 2 or 3 days to stabilize and return to medications, then return to the community, where traditionally the state hospital has a longer stay for stabilization. I see that as a definite part of the recovery model, however, and one that would be useful in every county in the state. I know that it allows many of our residents or people in the mental health system to essentially have someone to respond to, and also somebody who can sometimes cut through red tape and get them the services they need.
I attended a with a group of professionals and others and from the Marion County community. We went to Seattle and looked at their mental health system in King County, and where and instead of taking individuals with mental health issues, where they they're on the street or there's something happened and they end up in jails. The program is designed that we don't jail the individuals, that we actually are looking at having, you know, everything from mentors in a community who can assist the person who into housing and other support systems inside the community, and to assure that they're getting their medication. And that's what I was alluding to, because sometimes the court can provide both the carrot and the stick without them having to be incarcerated. And my question is, do you see that kind of effort or that kind of programming as a part of the recovery model? Because the recovery model talks about keeping individuals closer to home with certain resources inside of that community.
Chairman Goldberg, Senator Winters, absolutely. I see that as a part, with case management from county agencies being present and coordinating, helping people to get into therapy, making housing available. That's another big issue for many, many people. And I think that were something like that to be adopted, we would see a lot fewer people referred to the state hospital through the criminal justice system if their needs were met in other ways.
Not seeing any other questions, Dana. I know you had I cut you off. I know you had one more thing to say, so please.
Thank you, Chairman Goldberg. This is somewhat in response to Senator Anderson's comments about Portland. Regardless of where the hospitals are sited, there is a shortage of trained professionals in the state of Oregon. Part of that has to do with the way that professionals are paid in the state of Oregon compared to other states, and especially when compared to private practice. This is not only our psychiatrists and our nurses, but our psychologists, our social workers, our mental health specialists, and our certified nursing assistants. I would encourage you, when you consider revamping mental health as it is provided in the state of Oregon, to think that there are going to be a number of professionals needed at every level, in the communities, in the counties, as well as at the hospital, providing ways to enhance service for the state of Oregon would be a marvelous way to encourage people to come in, whether that would be providing education and then a contract of employment of number of years of service per number of years of education, or things of that sort would certainly be one way to do it. I know there are a number of different methods available. To have a trained professional staff is something that's absolutely necessary to the success of the hospital, but I would also suggest it's necessary for the success of mental health throughout the state of Oregon.
Thank you. Representative Boone, welcome.
Up on that, too. He's so right. I toured a children's mental health facility and learned that the workers there made less than what you can make at Burgerville. And they get a little, like, I don't know, a party or whatever. They get something, some sort of little pat on the back if they stay every 3 months. That was very sad to me, because the continuity of the staff is very important. So I think we really need to look at that when we let our contracts to these places.
And just follow up on that, too. Since
Senator Martin Sanderson?
You know, nonprofits like Albertina Kerr, which do a terrific job taking care of patients, they make less than the state employees do. So we have a lot of work to do.
Well, thank you all. Appreciate it. We have one more person who has requested to speak, Angela Kimball. Welcome, Angela.
Chair Goldberg, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Angela Kimball, and I'm here as a NAMI Oregon board member, but I also work as a policy analyst for the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs. And I just wanted to just say very briefly that NAMI members are all around the state of Oregon, and naturally, they are watching this committee very closely. They're very concerned about the state hospital. They want the best care possible for everyone. And they have expressed an interest that in the criteria weightings, that one of the things that's most critical, and not even on here, is proximity to patient homes and families. That the real home of the patients is in the community. It's not in the hospital. And the message I want to send is that it's vitally important that any site selection be based on where are patients coming from? Where is their home? Where are they going to return to? Because we like to think of the hospital as simply one step in a process of recovery, not an end point. And therefore, that proximity is very important. There are a number of members of NAMI who are elderly. There are a lot of individuals who are struggling with mental illness. There are a lot of people living in poverty. And another concern they have is the whole issue of transportation, and that being in connection with one's own home, one's family, one's community is vitally important. And while transportation, public transportation, isn't often thought of as a highest priority, it is a priority for people for whom this is a challenge on a daily basis. So we just wanted to alert the committee to that notion, that those are issues of extreme importance to NAMI Oregon. And then lastly, I did want to mention and thank Senator Monis Anderson, Senator Courtney, Senator Winters, Senator Gordley, and others for bringing up the whole community mental health piece. Because members from Pendleton to Burns, Oregon, to Medford are talking about that whole community mental health aspect and the fact that when we have our loved ones return to the community, we need the services there that can provide the support. And I think one of the most disturbing aspects about the state hospital for a lot of NAMI families and members is that it is filled with forensics patients. And those are people who have committed crimes and ended up in our justice system. And we'd like to see that stop. We'd like to see no forensics wards, if possible. We would actually like to see the building of an infrastructure in the community that can provide sentencing alternatives and the kind of care that would actually prevent people from needing to go through our criminal justice system and end up under supervision for months, years. We don't think that's the best way to reach recovery. And there are states that are very effectively using 24/7 wraparound teams, assertive community treatment teams, with inclusion of peer support specialists on those teams, and with flexible funds so that they can access medications, housing, job supports for individuals who are not Medicaid eligible, so that we can actually wrap services and supports around an individual, keep them in the community, keep the individual safe and healthy and on a road to recovery, and keep the community whole. So this is part of what we just want to send as a message, and we commend you on all your fine work. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Hold on. There might be some questions.
Oh.
Well, thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, what I'd like to do now is actually entertain from the committee any suggestions around moving items from one tier to another, or changing the weighting of the tiers. If we could have some discussion on If there's a desire to move any items, we can really get concrete, focus on the proposal. And what I'd like to do is be able to finalize something that we could vote on. We could have some have some final comments and discussion and vote on something. So at this point, I would look to committee members to make any concrete suggestions about changes to the draft. Senator Nelson.
Just from the thank you, Mr. Chair. Just from the testimony, it appears that the public transportation seems to be a crucial issue that we have that on second tier. You know, from my viewpoint, from eastern part of the state, we don't have any public transportation, so it wasn't important to me when I rated it. But I can, you know, have sensitivity to the fact that in this part of the state that is very crucial. So, I mean, we probably ought to discuss that. Seemed to be the one item that even the folks that are working with these people seem to think maybe we didn't get right. So I think we have to have some more discussion about that.
I'd look for other committee members' thoughts about their feeling about moving that up. Senator Nelson's suggesting that we move that to Tier 1. Senator Mona Sanderson?
I guess I would like to know how many patients that usually when you're at the state hospital, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're in a crisis mode, and so a lot of them do not leave, or do a lot of them leave? What I need to know are the numbers that... from the state hospital that need to use public transportation.
For the record, my name is Marvin Fickle. I'm the superintendent of Oregon State Hospital. Chairman Goldberg, Senator Mona Sanderson. It's important to remember we have two very distinct populations at the hospital. Actually, three if you include the geropsychiatric group. Among the civilly committed adults, we have approximately two-thirds of them who regularly leave the hospital to participate in a variety of activities.
How many, just so I can get an idea?
About 125. So approximately half of those are half to two-thirds at any given time. Everyone who comes to the hospital on the civilly committed side have been through an acute care facility in the community, has been evaluated both by that hospital, such as Adventist, one of the legacy hospitals, one of the other community hospitals, Eugene, Corvallis, etc., deemed appropriate for the state hospital by the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services, and then has come to the hospital for admission. Usually we're talking at least several weeks and often several months of acute care hospitalization before they come to the hospital. So this group of people are largely they're not in an acute phase. If you look at the other two-thirds of our folks, most of them come directly from county jails, and they run the gamut in terms of the severity of their current symptoms from an acute psychotic state to a very, not really requiring psychiatric hospitalization on the basis of their psychiatric symptoms. As you can appreciate, among that group, there is a large percentage, probably upwards of a third, who by the time they even go through a couple of months of our programming and medication, treatment in a variety of groups, are ready to participate in work, education, and ultimately into community activities. Currently, we have about 100 people in our 41 building who are essentially in the transition phase of their hospitalization. Almost all of them are daily involved in activities either on the campus or off the campus, utilizing a variety of local resources, of which community transportation is an essential part, or would be if it were accessed or would be able to be accessed by our patients. There's not, frankly, at this time, probably more than 10 or 15 people who use Salem Transport I'm blocking on the name of the Salem...
Chariot.
Right, to go to school or to work opportunities. Most of the transportation is provided by our hospital.
So basically we're talking about 10 to 15 people that actually use public transportation.
Correct.
Representative Hanna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just kind of going through the idea that of the two facilities, the two larger facilities that we're talking about in Phase 2, again, going back to Bob Nichols' testimony, we're talking about placing these facilities in an area where 93% of the state's population lives. it would be highly unlikely that you're going to put those in a place that there is not public transportation. I mean, on the west side of the mountains, in any of the most populated areas, you'd be hard-pressed to put it somewhere without trying, especially if you look at the criteria that we used for major transportation, which ground transportation, i.e. I-5, most of the communities that those would be considered are going to have public transportation. If you look at those 980 beds, and we heard that two-thirds of those are forensic patients who are unlikely to be using transit, you're talking, you know, 300 and some people who would even possibly be using it out of the two facilities. And lastly, to that point, we did rank that, and to your point of comment about, you know, what should we do on this, if there's a piece of information that you might want to, with staff, look at from my standpoint to confirm the ranking, would be to go back through your ranking process, throw out the high and the low, come back to the middle of that group. So throw the outliers out and come back and rank it again. I did some basic math here this morning. I think you'd find that even with that, they're very, very close, and you would find very little difference in the ranking. So to change it might not make a lot of sense in terms of you had a pretty broad group of people make the comparison, and if you go through and do that, you're going to get very little change.
We informally did that very exercise, and other comments about that, Senator Gordley?
Not about that.
Okay. I just wanted to, let's take them one by one, and just any other comments about transportation?
Well, I just didn't want it to get lost in it that maybe some of the staff might use the public transportation too. Okay.
Senator Gordley, you want to?
Thank you. Well, just reflecting on Ms. Kimball's testimony, I believe I heard that we need to be more explicit about patients being close to their home communities. I want to say it in the same way that Ms. Kimball said it. I don't want to reframe or rephrase her words, but I think that was a powerful reminder to us.
So, really,
to move that up and to have that NAMI thinking reflected in our ranking.
And that was, you were saying to move up the, I believe it was the proximity to patient families and sort of adding and home and moving that up.
Yeah. Does that capture, if I could just give a nod, does that capture what you were saying, Ms. Kimball?
Because I think, follow up there.
Senator Mona Sanders.
Just on that, I think there's a difference because many of the patients are probably adults and have homes separate from their families, but I think we were referring to those patients, so really the appropriate word would be patients base home. Is that what?
Please come up, Angela.
I'm not sure the protocol here.
The protocol is to come on up.
Okay. Chair Goldberg, Senator Gordley, Senator Mona Sanderson, we did want to refer at NAMI Oregon to the notion that patients do come from homes, their own homes, not necessarily from their parents' homes. Mm-hmm. And that didn't appear to be reflected in the list. So while we didn't have specific language, we were talking about proximity to patients' homes and the importance of proximity to their families, recognizing that those are not one in the same.
And can I ask a question?
Yes.
Because we're going a couple of tracks here. One is talking about the, and I heard you say, the community mental health system. And ideally, when we talk about that system has the resources inside of its community so that some of the individuals that we're talking about now that ultimately end up, whether coming through the jails or whatever, in the state system, that we can actually divert them if you had those abilities inside of the community. Is that not what NAMI is supporting and would like to see us go in that direction? That's part of the recovery model.
Chair Goldberg, Senator Winters, absolutely.
That's why I think it's difficult, and we've been talking that disconnect. It, you know, we're talking here about citing that those facilities to where you can't truly manage inside the in the community that require the long hospital stay, and then you have the other piece of it where we're talking about that the community is organized in a way that we can do a much better job in providing the services inside of the community where they don't have to come to the state hospital, where we have an individual who is picked up by law enforcement on the street for various sundry reasons, and they're being, rather than housing them in the jail, we're having the wraparound services where they're medicated, where you've got a peer coach or whomever that can provide the case management. Do I have this?
Chair Goldberg, Senator Winters, so you have it absolutely perfect. That's exactly what.
And I think what you're getting at is the distinction between the community facilities, which we need to build and need to be in the homes of and around where people live, and then the difference between the two large facilities that we will be citing.
Yes.
And that the. What you're really speaking to is also what Senator Courtney spoke to, which was the importance of the community infrastructure, which are indeed how we need to build the system, and that are important and related to what we're doing, but where we site the facilities is really going to be dependent on more of the job that we do out there.
I think it's critical because Senator Courtney raised it, and he's absolutely correct. It is critical that if we do not have the infrastructure in the communities, we will repeat, what happened with the deinstitutionalization of Fairview. And I think there's a reason why that emphasis is placed inside of the report. Because to talk about one without making sure that we have the other infrastructure pieces inside of the community, we will not have done the comprehensive work in mental health, in my just limited knowledge about this issue.
Thanks, Angela. You know, I just wanted to take one moment to. There's one of our members that couldn't be here today, Representative Jensen, and we discussed this proposal with him, and he had a comment actually very germane to what we're talking about now, and he had asked that we pass that along to the group because he had some strong feelings. So I'm turning things over to Patty O, who spoke with him.
Thank you. For the record, Patricia O'Sullivan. I spoke with Representative Jensen. He's sorry he couldn't be here today. He will be available by phone at 11. However, we may not make it till 11, but we'll see. He did want me to convey to you, as he looked at the proposal, something struck him about the proximity to patients' families. But what struck him was a little opposite of what you're talking about. He was very taken with the testimony that we had by a gentleman who said, I can't remember his name, but he was actually a former patient. And he was fairly adamant that family, in fact, could sometimes hinder. That was his testimony. And Representative Jensen was pretty taken with that. And his request is that the proximity to patients' families, not necessarily their own homes, not be moved, and that it was ranked the way it was, and that he's comfortable with that. So he wanted me to convey that to you.
Thanks. Senator Courtney.
I don't mean to mess this all up, but the one thing that's common in discussion is this 93%. Well, what's interesting about that, again on page 38, if you look at the recommendation where they say they recommend option number two, is preferred for the following reason. In keeping with the recovery model, this option would provide the state of Oregon with the opportunity for a significant majority, 93% of patients, now get this, to have convenient access to their home communities, family, and friends at the most reasonable cost. Well, isn't that interesting? Because if you listen to all the cumulative testimony we've had, in family, if you're talking about mother and fathers, you can have an individual who truly comes from Pendleton. They may have spent, though, a good bunch of adult life in Portland. And lo and behold, because they stay down here, if you want to get into friends, they could have a goodly number of friends around here. I'm not trying to mess you up. I'm just saying KMD basically said, I think we've assuming they've come up with one single definition of what we mean by family. Basically, they got everything in here. The home communities, the family and friends. So I don't know if that helps anybody. It doesn't help me except to say, this is a very dynamic thing we're talking about here. What do you mean by family? What do you mean by friends? What do you mean by home community? So I'm just saying that because I, reading this closely, I think I know where they want to go, but I don't know what to do about ranking all these priorities unless you want to create two more categories to say friends, home community. I'm not trying to be a smart guy. I just don't know how else to deal with this very lively and dynamic discussion as to what is the best interest of the patient.
Well, I think what you're saying is, by definition, if parcels of land make it through the pass-fail criteria, they will be in proximity to 93%.
Of all three of those things? You talk of home communities, family, and friends. I'm not trying to contradict.
I don't know. That's the statement here that we can, I think, have some comfort in the fact that by putting the facilities, but by basically just getting through that top tier, we will be doing this.
Okay.
Then it becomes, I think, a matter of some judgment.
That's why you're Dr. Goldberg. That's very good. Thank you.
And if that's the understanding that we're placing on record, I'm comfortable with that. I think it reflects what we heard from Ms. Kimball.
That's good. That helps me.
Other... Other comments. I just would be remiss in raise an old issue. You know, we had talked about airport accessibility early on, and had actually taken it off. It's still on here. I don't know if people want to take that off. Have any strong feelings one way or another? I don't see any strong feelings. I want to close the discussion about Senator Mona Sanderson?
Actually, airport accessibility, if it's going to hurt some of these other things that I really feel strongly about, I don't mind taking airport accessibility off. It seems to me that whether it's located in Bend, or West Wind, you still need to transport a certain distance. So it'd be interesting to see, is airport accessibility really important to employees or admin staff? So I would just take it off.
Senator Winters.
I looked at that and I'm saying I didn't think we were in flying status, but we transport now. We transport through I-5 and others. I don't know how frequently, if ever, we actually use the airport.
I don't know. Doesn't seem we use it very often, and we had another criteria which was proximity to major transportation, and I think that was it's sort of included in there. So,
just
Senator Nelson.
Just aside from the Eastern Oregon, we actually do fly in some psychiatric professional staff into Pendleton for community-based things, and so it's very important for the doctors in Portland to be able to fly out in the morning and fly back in the afternoon. Mm-hmm.
But now that they're doing, and what's coming in the future of, just like distance learning, we might not have to fly people back and forth because we're able to do clinical work now through the computer and stuff. So, technology.
I move that we remove airport accessibility from technical land use issues.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor of removing the airport, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, two opposed, and I think we had a majority to remove it. What I would do is, at this point, we've had a lot of discussion. We have a proposal, I think, that we could probably talk for a long time about a lot of fine-tuning adjustments, that everybody's got a different way of looking at this. My sense is, based on the discussions we've had, based on the testimonies, that the draft that people have before them, with the deletion of the airport issue, although the airport issue is certainly not by any way unanimous.
Mr. Chair, when you say proximity to major transportation, that could include air.
It certainly does in my mind.
In my mind, too.
But removing that this is a line item, but understanding that it is part of major transportation, that we have a draft proposal before us that I think generally reflects the intent, the rankings, et cetera, that there may be some individual feelings one way or another. I guess at this point I would ask if there's last opportunity to any strong feelings about making any more changes in anything that people feel particularly strong about, Representative Boone, and then Senator Gordley.
I mean, I would say, too, I would have been a no had that not been assumed to fit into the second proximity one. Because I do think it's important, but it works for me to put it in that one.
Senator Gordley?
Thank you. Just a process check. This committee has two alternate members. Our status regarding voting is what, if that could be clarified for the record.
I appreciate that, and my understanding that it's the committee members who vote if the alternate members have been participants and have been equals in terms of participating in the discussion, but if I think by nature of being alternate meant not voting unless someone wasn't present. Seeing that we have four senators of the regular members, I think that means that that you wouldn't be voting, but we certainly very much value and have valued the input. Looking down at this side, however, I think that Representative Dalto, since Representative Jensen isn't here, the vote, and I, not being an expert in the parliamentary procedures, I'd look to my left and right to make certain I got that right. And okay. Well, good.
Thank you.
No, and thank you. I really appreciate the deliberate nature of raising that. Mm-hmm. And I should have done that myself, so thank you. Yes, Lindsay actually is a voting member, but I believe Aaron is an ex officio member, and so would not vote, but has been participating in the discussion.
And yourself.
And I'm a voting member, I believe. I'd ask someone to make a motion, I just want to see if there would be any further comments that people would like to make for the record.
Mr. Chair, I would, but probably after. I mean, I think this is exciting criteria, but afterwards I'd like to
okay.
Let's go and get on with the board.
Great. I call for somebody to make a motion.
Well, I move that the Oregon State Hospital siting criteria, waiting proposal, is set out in phase two review, page two-page document 829-2006. That's the document you're referring to, that
yes.
be adopted by the siting committee.
I said.
With the deletion of the airport, yes or no?
Well, yeah, I assumed that.
Okay,
that
we already did that.
Care
exactly.
And that's been done, so
okay.
I should have said perhaps as amended by earlier committee okay. action, if that's what
you wanted.
Yes.
Is there a second?
I second.
Any discussion? Representative Boone?
And does that include then moving public transport and proximity up from Tier 1 to Tier 1? Or?
My understanding was that it's as it stands, with the only change being the deletion of the airport accessibility, and with the understanding that that's included as major transportation. In that case, sounds like everybody understands. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Good job. Senator Nelson had some comments. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the good work that everybody's done, and I think this is the direction we're going to really get. I just, from a practical standpoint, I have some real concerns because the testimony that I've heard is that if we don't have the community-based stuff, just building these buildings is basically what are we doing it for? I'm very concerned about that. And we're sitting, and I think the legislature is going to be in a situation where actually we have two ballot measures that could be substantially influential in how this whole thing comes out. You've got the spending limit. I think that's ballot measure 48. But then there's the other ballot measure of ballot measure 39, which is the connection of the federal tax exemption reduction thing, which I just read yesterday potentially could cost $600 million in 0709. Biennium. This program is going to take money to operate, I think, as President Courtney indicated. And I have some real, just the practical part of me is saying that at least one of those two is probably going to pass. And we're going to have a real issue from the legislative viewpoint of how to really make this a world-class mental health system. And if we can't do it through the taxations, how are we going to do that? And I think that it's going to put a pretty big strain on us to figure out how are we going to actually fund these things. I sit on the education committee with Senator Deckard, and their early education, they're talking about $200 or $300 million would be just, that's kind of what they'd like to do for that program. And then you go through all, what the community colleges want, what do the higher education want, what does everybody want in this thing? And, we're going to have to find some other sources of funding outside of taxes, I believe. And we'll see what the election comes up. But I think for this body or the legislature, we're in a very difficult situation because there's this huge, tremendous need for public services. And the taxpayers basically saying, well, I would rather have that money in my own pocket rather than send it to you guys down there. And I just think, just from a realistic standpoint, we have to be very careful in what direction we go, because do we spend $300 or $400 million to build these buildings and not have a good program? So that's my concern.
In a follow-up on that note, Mr. Chair, I take a look at, I would hate to build a hospital, but we're going to be building a hospital, but without having operating funds, and that's what's really scary about this. We're taking a leap of faith. We know the state of Oregon needs this, and we as legislators know that we have to have a better mental health system in our state, and we're going to go ahead, and it'll be our duty to just try to convince and talk to our own constituents in our own districts how important services like this is for. We have to start saying how important our school system is. It is vital to the economy and the well-being of the state. The same with healthcare, the same with mental health, the same with a good public safety program. And we have to do that. And we as legislators need to say that to those who are the voters. We have to convince them, because it's immoral to not provide these services, in my book.
Mr. Chair, I totally...
Representative Hannon and Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're in some general comments here, one of the things that that I'm anxiously awaiting, that I think we're going to have this conversation in lieu of the comments that Senator Nelson made, is that, you know, we've looked at the framework master plan. We understand that need. We're being reviewed by the federal government in terms of our staffing. I think this committee or something similar at some point, and you know, the onus is going to fall with you and your agency, but have we looked at a pro forma basis study to look at the current staffing level with the current Oregon State Mental Health Hospital system versus the upcoming current system, two big buildings, a couple of more out there somewhere? You know, we heard testimony from some of the folks who work there today. We have some staffing issues, but the legislature, in my opinion, one of the more difficult pieces of this will be, what are we currently doing and what's that cost? When you put this new structure in place, what does that cost look like? And how do you fill the gap, as we heard, in terms of a staffing piece? Because let's assume that we can make this thing happen and we can put bricks and mortar together and find property and do that, and we put them up. Between now and then, can we fill the gap for physically putting the bodies in place to operate these facilities? And probably more importantly, if we can even do that, can we fund it? So I'd like to hear maybe from you where we're at in the process of that kind of a study, because once this siting criteria, and I understand that's why we're here, is to get the criteria, and I'm 100% with you, but once that's done, some of these other questions are going to have to be answered, and that's a big one.
I think you've raised there are three important issues in this, in the state hospital development, as I look at it, and we've raised the second one here today, which is the community system. We've dealt with the first, which is the bricks and mortar of needing to build a new facility. And you've now touched on the third issue, which is both the operation, the funding, and the staffing of these new hospitals. That's something that we have begun to look at as an agency in terms of what we will be needing and being able to articulate, and would welcome the opportunities to have those discussions with the legislature, because I think it's going to be critical, and I think that we need to pay attention, as we heard today, to both how we build, operate, staff, design a community mental health system, and how we build, operate, staff, fund the state facility. And the expense and the cost and the challenge actually will be in the staffing and the operation and the ongoing delivery of the services, and not in the one-time facility cost. Senator Winters.
You know, I think that Senator Nelson brought up, you know, some really questions that this body, the legislative body, will have to answer. But, you know, I sat here and I listened and I, you know, thought about those of us who have served several years on budget, and the issue of the state hospital and the bricks and mortar and the staffing and all that, that's not new. That is not new. You know, benign neglect has put us where we are today. The lack of investment, the lack of taking, of addressing the issues of staffing and the deterioration of the buildings out of the state hospital did not just occur yesterday. The issue of community resources did not just happen with the study. You know, those of us who have been in this building, and you know, me particularly, have been in Ways and Means, who have screamed about some of this stuff, And getting your colleagues to recognize that we have a responsibility to take care of the individuals who we're responsible with the state. The children's mental health program, the problems in that program did not just occur today. I have to say that because we act as though suddenly we're faced with some issues. I said when we first started to take a look at the report that came from the governor's office. You know, that was as a result of a request by Senator Carter and I going to the governor, asking the governor if he would convene a group, and he did. Prior to that was the study that was done by Neil Goldsmith's administration. So I have to put that on record. This is not something that suddenly, oops, came and fell in our lap. And I think we would be remiss if we don't, you know, this session coming up, really work to address the issue of the mentally ill in our community and at our state hospital. Maybe the driver is to talk about because things have become so bad. It's too bad that we have to have a threat of the state government coming in for an investigation before we act. But I think it's time that we do act. I just have to say that because it's not anything new.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Cordley.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Winters. You know, I don't want us to assume passage of Measure 48. I'm not going to make that assumption. I want us to fight against that passage, recognizing the damage that will be done to our state should the measure pass. Senator Mons Anderson used the word moral. Moral responsibility, I think, was a part of her phrase. I think we have a moral responsibility to join and lead an organized campaign against Measure 48. I don't want to... I don't know that I want to live in a state that is headed in the direction of making the lives of those who are already vulnerable even more vulnerable. I can't accept that. I refuse to accept that. And so again, my plea to us would be that we all examine what will the quality of our leadership stand for as individuals and also collectively. Our state is on the verge of something going forward or sliding backwards in a way that we will not recover from. And I say this as someone who, I love this state, born and raised here, been a part of this institution 15 years next month. And again, I'll just say what I started with. I don't want to assume that Measure 48 is going to pass. I want us to get out there and use all of our energy and all of our individual and collective power to fight this thing and to tell the citizens of Oregon what it is that's truly at stake.
Thank you. You know, I would like to thank everybody on the committee. You know, improving the services for individuals with mental illness is one of our most important challenges and a difficult one. And I think each piece of doing that is vitally important, but each piece isn't really an end. It's really just the movement to the next piece of that, and we've taken on one of those pieces. It's not the end, as I think we've pointed out. It's really the beginning, but we've done a great job. We've dealt with one piece of this, which is to figure out some criteria by which to site a facility. I think in doing that, what we've done is affirmed the need in the state, and I think everybody who's been here and who's been walked through the the hospital understands the need to build a new facility, and we've affirmed that, and we've begun that process. I think we've also recognized that there are many challenges ahead, such as staffing and operating those facilities appropriately and providing the quality of services within those buildings, building the community infrastructure that's going to make that a success and provide the services. And I think the last thing that this group has done, and I've been really impressed with, is really gain a much greater appreciation and understanding of the issues and a lot of the complexities. I think we've certainly done our job and done our job well. I want to thank everybody, and I think put in, it seems to me this is the kind of group, a joint legislative group that could indeed perhaps continue to deal with many of the challenges as we move forward. And you know, I would certainly look forward to working with such a group. And you know, we've done our work. It'd be up to the speaker and the president to call this group in some other configuration or whatever back together. But it seems people have really gained an increased understanding, and I really appreciate the work that's been done, and thank everybody. And with that, we'll call this to conclusion.